Hi, everybody. This is Marlene Pardo Pelliser, author, narrator, producer of Stories of the Supernatural, Nightshade Diary, and Supernatural Storytime. The following is an appearance I did with Carol Banayos, who's a personal coach on her podcast on Facebook titled Wake the F Up. And it was a fantastic interview. And I urge you to visit with Carol because she has so many episodes upcoming with different guests talking about living the best life that you can, of course, because you actually wake up. And here it is.
Marlene Pardo Pelliser?
Pelliser. Close enough, don't worry. Yeah.
Pelliser, because sometimes like I can't pronounce things properly. So I'm just going to read her bio, which is a really phenomenal bio. So Marlene is a native Miamian, I hope I'm right, and an author of fiction and nonfiction books. She is also the producer, host, and narrator of the paranormal show, Stories of the Supernatural, and the podcast show Nightshade Diary, Supernatural Storytime, and the blog author of Stranger Than Fiction. Marlene holds a Master of Science degree in Human Behavior and Health. She is a certified master hypnosis and considers herself a subconscious behavioralist and has had a private practice for years. And at one time she worked as an investigator for a state level agency. Ooh, some CSI shit.
Yes, that role shall remain unnamed. Yes.
Unnamed, yeah. Yeah, and Marlene appeared in season one, episode one of Paranormal Survivor, which presently airs on Destination America and Netflix. And season one, episode 12 of The Haunted Hospitals, which air on the Travel Channel.
Yes.
Travel Channel. Mm-hmm. And her first book, Walker Between the Worlds, a dark supernatural fantasy, was released on October 2019. A novella was released in December 2019, and Part of a Civil Universe and March 2020, The Path to Purgatory became available, and another Sybil novella and book 3 will be released during 2020. And in March 2020, she released I've Come for My Girl and two other dark tales, Winter Shade Stories, a young adult horror anthology. Yeah, that sounds scary. Her other books, Haunted History of the Old West, Wicked Ladies, and The Bad Hombres They Love, The Lady in the Blue Kimono, Film Noir Murders, and Supernatural Safety are available on her website and on Amazon. And after this interview, I will have a time there where Marlene's going to share all of that information where you can get in contact with her and then get all of that good stuff from her. And she founded Miami Ghost Chronicles in the 1990s and considers herself one of the only of the handful of hardcover paranormal investigators who work under what she calls the dungeon approach, which we're going to find out what that means. Yes. Later on, which is basically little or no reliance on technology to research the unseen world of the paranormal. She's has also worked mainly with research groups in Florida, but she has also assisted other organizations and private clients across the country. Like, wow, what a bio, Marlene.
God, I feel like I'm impressed with myself. Temporarily, though.
Yeah, so
then reality hits you and you go, oh, yes, we wake up, stop it.
So thank you so much, Marlene, for joining me today. And I'm so excited for everyone here to, you know, dive deep into the amazing information and healing information and all that good that you're going to offer today. And so I just kind of want to jump into the questions right away. I have some that I asked, and then I have questions to kind of dive deep into your knowledge and the experience that you have.
Sure.
So the first one is, Marlene, who are you?
Wow. This could be either really simple or very complicated. No, it's let me tell you something. I think this is something that we don't get till we get a little bit older in life. When we're younger, when I mean younger, teens, 20s, we're very absolute.
you know, black or white, good or bad. I want to be this, you know, this is what I will be. This is the image I have in my head of my destiny. And sometimes it can work to your advantage. But I find that as you go through life, depending on what goes on with you, you know that saying, to thine own self be true? That truth changes as you go through life, in other words.
Yeah.
There is a part of you which will always be the same person you were born being. But when I find that when people are very rigid, even about their self-image, they end up very unhappy because they tend not to accept certain things about themselves, even disagreeable things. So if as to the answer to that question, I'm a work in progress. Mm-hmm. And by this, I don't mean I've got like 20 personalities, you know, nothing like that. I'm just saying I consider myself forever the student, always mm-hmm. learning, always leaving the door open for new ideas, even if they challenge things that I know. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I think this is very important. You know, when you're a kid, that you have this great imagination and that anything is possible. Mm-hmm. And as we grow older, we kind of tend to lose it. For lack of a better word, we become a little bit more cynical. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to protect part of our self from becoming that so cynical that we become rigid and we don't believe anything. And that imagination, that part of us that lets us see beyond, in other words, suspend your disbelief, we lose it. So that's what I'm saying. I'm always a work in progress because tomorrow I could come across something that I'm like, wow, either I didn't know about it or it contradicts a belief I had before. So yeah, that's you know, and you learn to be more comfortable. You know, when you got that pair of shoes that you break in,
yeah,
that they're your go-to shoes, that you become that person where happiness and comfort become more important than the outward appearance, totally. Yeah. That, and I want to say, unfortunately, that sometimes society drives us to, you know, mm-hmm. these expectations about how we look, how we behave, what we have, and we're kind of fooled into thinking you'll be happy, or that how people see you is how you'll be happy. And you learn later on in life that that's not really that accurate. Unless you're a complete narcissist, that is. So I know there's narcissists going out there. She doesn't know what she's talking about.
Yeah. And so what point in your life did you realize that you had to wake the fuck up? And what was that process like for you?
Well, I'll be honest with you. During my 20s, I was busy being a mom. I had my 3 children when I was in my 20s. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, it doesn't give you much time to ponder things. Mm-hmm. As far as introspection, how's that? Mm-hmm. And you take on this role, because you have to, because you choose it, you know, hopefully, that you're a mom. And you kind of put your who you are kind of on the back burner, but it's still there. Because that's why I even tell my kids now that they're adults, you know, believe it or not, before I was your mother, I was Marlene. You know, you're still always that person. I mean, in other words, as important as that role is, you're still the person prior to becoming a mother. And sometimes you have to put that on the back burner. But it's always a process. You're always learning. Maybe you have to slow down because, like I said, you owe other obligations in your life more of your attention. But even during my 20s, I was always reading. I was completing my degree very slowly. And just, believe it or not, even with my kids, I learned that imagination thing because it's beautiful to see children when they see things with a child's eyes, in other words, that they don't question things, you know, making my kids believe in Santa Claus to the umpteenth moment till they kind of came around and go, Mom, you're Santa, right? And I'm like, no. Well, so-and-so told me. And I'm like, no, we just helped Santa out. And they're looking at me like, sure, Mom. I kind of, you know, but yeah, it's there's, if I want to say there, for me, there, everybody's different. I don't think I ever had that moment of epiphany where like, oh, you know, it's this process that you go through on a daily basis. I'm going to say that I also learned that, unfortunately, because I lived through this era of what technology has done for us, where all of a sudden, if you're not multitasking, you feel guilty. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you mean? I can't be looking at my calendar while at the same time I'm on a phone call, while then I've still got something on the stove, or I'm thinking, or I'm trying to book a, make a reservation for lunch, or, hey, where are you going? You know, we, technology has made us, like, if you're not multitasking, you're like, you know, what am I not doing? We kind of lost that ability or that desire for introspection, which, by the way, I think we all need it, even if it's 10 minutes, yeah, where you stop a minute and you just, you know, that thing that people call veg out, which is, yeah, I'm just going to sit here and stare at the wall. Or go to a park and sit and just look like I'm like high or something, but you're not. You're just like emptying your mind out without thinking. And by the way, your first tendency is to run and do a to-do list in your head. And that was one of the things I learned, that if I wanted to keep my sanity, I had to set aside that time, squeeze it in somewhere where I owed myself that, by the way, without feeling any guilt about it either. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I have to say before we go into the next question, mm-hmm, I love your earphones and your,
yes,
earrings.
You know why? Because this is to remind people not to take themselves seriously. These, yeah, are little kid stuff. Yes.
Yeah, love them.
Yeah, because sometimes I talk about dead people and it's like, wait, this is really morbid sometimes. So let's put some levity in it.
Yeah.
So yes, thank you.
Yeah, and for you, what do you believe the reason why you came onto Earth? Like, what is your purpose here on Earth?
Wow. Okay, well, you know what? I think that's the universal questions that you find a lot of people are always searching for. What is my purpose? You know, like, if I miss it, like, my purpose. I think your purpose changes as you go through life. And people want this hard and fast answer and say, that's it. I found my purpose in life and that's it. I don't have to worry about it. And that's what it is. And I think that changes. I've come across people that when they graduated and went into, you know, university, they knew exactly what they wanted to be. I'll give you an example. They wanted to be a doctor, go into the medical field or whatever. And back then they were, that was their purpose back then. Fast forward 25, 30 years, or even sooner, depends. And sometimes it fades. They just don't feel the same. And they feel bad. They think like, how did I lose my purpose? What's wrong with me? And it's not that you were wrong back then. It's that you've changed. Mm-hmm. And they don't, they feel like, man, was I leading myself on? No, it's, I think as we go along, our purpose changes. There's times, let's say, when your purpose is to be a parent, you know, because it's a full time, and maybe you have to put other things again, like in the back burner, depending on your choice, on your career. I think that a lot of us want that guarantee that if somebody says, if I could guarantee you right now, you're not going to fail. People think that by knowing their true purpose, that's going to, how can I say, shield them from making a failure. Just as important, that, you know, there's other people that they go through forever, like they never settle on anything. And I found that at some point you gotta execute. You know, mm-hmm, you gotta, like I said, do that self-introspection and say, you know what, I might not have the entire answer, but I got part of it, and I need to, you know, when the rubber meets the road, and start going, like, do it. Put the foot on the accelerator and let's see where this takes us. But some people want all the answers up front. Mm-hmm. They want the guarantees. They want the answer to all the questions, including what's my purpose, before they make a decision, mm-hmm, to actually do something. Yeah. And you know what? Sometimes it turns out great. Sometimes it's not what you expected. And sometimes it's a big, giant mistake. But we learn from our mistakes. That's another thing, which is we need to learn how to forgive ourselves when we make a mistake. Some people like beat themselves their entire lives, or that, you know, when you did that stupid thing, and 40 years later, they're still, you know, you and you did that stupid thing. It's like, at some point, you got to learn and let it go.
Yes, I agree. And do you feel that, like, you know, when you say sometimes, like, I believe purpose does change. Yes. However, if you know that maybe say if you're destined for service, right? And even within that, I don't know, when you said that, you know, there's different purposes and they change throughout your life. And I was thinking, is there that point where you are fulfilling multiple purposes at one time? So within, you know, fulfilling your destination, why you're put on this earth to serve others, and then fulfilling your purpose as a mom, you know?
Of course. You know, you have to tailor it sometimes just because of time. You know, there's only so much you can do. Because that's another thing. On an individual basis, you have to do self-care. Mm-hmm. In other words, you cannot do so much wanting to be all these roles. Because somehow you feel you're coming up short. And then you don't get enough sleep. You're not eating right. You're not giving yourself enough downtime. Because you feel like, well, if I got to do this and I got to do that. For example, when my kids are a little bit older, as they got older, we would do the 5K for charitable events or for pets or something, you know. So it was like, okay, I'm going to bring my kids into an effort for some cause I believe in, you know, like a 5K usually, which is 3 miles, which my kids could do, and they loved it. And it was a way of putting together something I wanted to do on an individual basis, but have including my kids in it. And it also taught them about, you know, giving, in other words, or being of service, even the best way we could, you know, things like that. Later on, I did it with, you know, I bicycled also in a lot of charity events. I even took one point my granddaughter with me when she was a little bit old enough, and she loved it. In other words, you learn how to manage your things and realizing this is what's going on in my life right now, maybe for the next couple of years, and then it evolves. There's no hard and fast rules about. Some people seem to think, well, this is my life. Oh my God, this is forever my life, and it's not. This is just where you're at right now, and you just manage it the best way you can, depending on what your aspirations are. Like I said, when I was in my 20s and my kids, I had a full-time job. I was trying to finish my degree. This was before online courses. So I had no choice, but I made an agreement with my husband, and like twice a week, I would take evening courses. I would go to one of the universities here had an off-campus office where they would, as a matter of fact, they were doing it for working adults, you know, and everybody there had a full-time job, which meant after I got out of work, I would go over and take this class. And you would think, man, you'll be forever trying to get your degree. But at some point, I realized time is going to go by no matter what.
Yeah.
So guess what? I took one class and then I took another class. And by the way, I'm so proud of myself, my job actually subsidized the cost of the classes, which there are a lot of places don't do anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in other words, and I found myself doing that, they would have said, man, one class at a time, that'll be forever. Forget it. Don't even try. Big mistake. If it's only small, incremental steps, that's what you can do. Do it. Just do it. Mm-hmm. And let it go. Because time is going to go forward no matter what.
Yes.
Even if you're like, no, no, no. It's like, it's going to go forward. You're going to be a year older. And things move forward, whether you want to or not. It goes. The world moves forward.
And that's beautiful. And so just with your time on Earth here so far, what are things that you know for sure about life?
Oy. that I have a... Expectations have a lot to do with what happens in your life. And by this, I mean, yes, sometimes things happen to us or to those around us, not good things that affect us profoundly. In other words, we're a victim of circumstance. You can't even say, oh, you did that well. You know, that was stupid. It's just things that happen to us. But I want to say expectations have so much to do also with what happens. There's people that are always expecting the bad thing, the other shoe to drop. And wow, life has a way of giving you exactly what you expect. Yeah. Expectations has a lot to do with it. When you expect good things, you'd be surprised how many times they show up on your doorstep. As a matter of fact, a lot of people that do this are the ones that people say, oh, so-and-so, they're so lucky. Believe it or not, luck is not, it's more like expectations that they see this as a friendly universe versus a hostile universe. And this is something that Albert Einstein spoke about. How do you see the universe? Is it friendly or is it hostile? Because believe it or not, the way we perceive it is how it treats us back. Because whether you want to call it expectations, a law of attraction, whether this is already manifested, but you bring it into, so it will cross with paths with you. All right? All these things, believe it or not, as far as manifestation and what happens to us in our lives, nobody has a perfect life, but that you could say, you know, yeah, I've had my ups and downs, but overall I'm happy with my life. I consider I'm a lucky person. Mm-hmm. Has a lot to do with what we expect for life to give us. And by the way, it's the memory of good events that sustain you when you're going through a rough patch. Because you know, life is better than this. You know, like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I know that life can be good. I just have to get through this. Whereas people have always had not so good luck or everything is dark. They think, oh, this is, yeah, just I never get a break. You know, that self-fulfilling prophecy that they expect the worst. And that's exactly what happens to them. And then maybe later on in life when you ask them, they'll say, oh, man, I never caught a break. Never. Everything never turned out for me. So, yeah, that's one thing I've learned. Expectations and how you view the universe. As in your universe. Everybody's got a different reality on it. Has a lot to do with what it delivers to you.
Yeah, like that quote that you said, that's actually one of my best friends, he kind of uses that quote too. That, you know, you always have to ask yourself, is this a friendly universe? And yes, I believe it is, you know?
Right. Even when bad things happen, you know, which we, you know how we tend to think like God has it out for you or like fate is like, okay, what's up with this? It's very tempting sometimes to feel like you're being singled out. Especially when stuff happens to you, like, out of left field.
Yeah.
But, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's a temporary thing. And the sooner you stop that... And by the way, it's okay to feel that. It's, you know, you can't... You know how there's these people that Pollyanna, like, tra-la-la, everything is...
Yeah.
It's okay to go through moments of, like, sadness, anger, even sometimes a little bit of despair. The problem is when you stay there,
Yes. When
you start feeling so sorry for yourself that you just wallow in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you run into a problem. Spiritually, psychologically, and of course it affects you physically.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 1,000% there. And for you, you know, in regards to waking the fuck up, what do you feel personally for yourself and on your experience, what is the one thing that people can start to do today to start waking the fuck up?
I think that, wow, let me think about that. It's like, if I heart, okay, I know this is going to say, I'm going to say the one thing that I think is a big culprit in most people's lives. Most people that I've spoken to that are in a place where they either want to change something a lot in their lives or a certain aspect of their life. I guarantee you, without knowing the particulars about a particular person, it's resistance to change.
Mm-hmm.
They might logically say, I want to change this or I'm not happy with this, depending on the scale of what they're changing. Some of them want to do a whole life change. It's resistance to change. Resistance to change. They might say they want the change, but psychologically or subconsciously, they do not And they tell the universe, I don't want to change, even though they're saying they do. I would tell people, if I had to do something today, I would say, what is it that I want to change? If number one, okay, how's this? I would say, look at what you can do in a 24-hour period. Okay? I know there's such a thing as to-do list, but as far as actually thinking, like, look at your day within a 24-hour capsule. What can I do today? All right? And you might decide, you know what? I'm going to really think about what do I want to change. If it's a large change, can I break it down into segments? And then I would say, number one, on a physical level, declutter your house if you have to. Number two, rearrange stuff in your house, your furniture. Nothing says to the universe, I'm willing to accept change, as in making actual physical changes in your surroundings. And people think, what? You mean rearrange my furniture? What? Yes. Yes. It's almost like the first execute of that you get it from here to actually doing it. Rearrange your furniture, declutter your what you got. I would even say go eat someplace you haven't gone to before. Do something new. Starting that day. Okay? And you'd be surprised how many people feel uncomfortable. If you want to test how resistant you are to change, even something like that, tell yourself, okay, I'm going to do this. I bet you any amount of money, you talk yourself out of it. You become too busy. Somebody calls you for something. Oh, I'll do it tomorrow. That right there is your subconscious mind telling you, you say you want change, but not really. That I would say if you were going to start it, whatever change it is, whatever it might be, start with that. Start with that. And you'd be surprised. You're going to discover a lot about how resistant you are, which means your subconscious is fooling you into thinking, yeah, sure, we'll change. Okay. But we'll think about that tomorrow. And then a year goes by, and then another year goes by. And then you have those stories. Well, you know, once I thought about doing that, but. So, yeah.
No, that's really amazing that you mentioned that, because people need to know that change is the only constant.
Yes.
And that if you are not going to take the actions to change, you know, you are essentially one day going to be forced to change, whether you like it or not.
Yes.
And that could be the cause of, you know, a breakdown or some kind of thing that it's maybe not going to be supported to you, because, like, you know, as you say, the subconscious and certain things like that, you always get these internal promptings, I believe I like to call them, you know what I mean, Kay? It's time to look at that, it's time to, you know, start to finally work at that, but you kind of ignore until one day it's like, oh, you know what I mean, it's something that's so small and manageable is now it's like so overwhelming and you're forced to. And sometimes people can come out of that and sometimes they can't. Like, it's very detrimental,
right? And I'm telling you, people don't realize how, and let's face it, as humans, we are creatures of habit. Even the person that says, you know, everybody's, you know, some people it's more ingrained than others as far as that feeling of security. And I, you know, this is helps me go through my day because I know what's going to happen. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But when it comes to changing, sometimes we become very resistant to it. And sometimes we do need to change. It is necessary. And like you said, if you dig your heels in, all you're going to end up is changing and feeling very frustrated because it's going to happen no matter what.
Yes. No matter what.
Yes.
Yeah. So I want to get into you. Let's dive in deep to Marlene. So what inspired you to take the education that you have taken? So the Master's of Science degree in human behavior and subconscious behavior. And what does that mean in regards to your ability to help others?
Well, originally, you know, when I got out of high school, I thought I wanted to go into law. Yeah. You know that thing about then life gets in the way? I landed a good job. I got married. I had kids. And then somewhere along the way, this is what I'm saying, I learned that I wanted to understand why we do what we do.
Mm.
Okay? Sometimes people are everything you expect, and then others are, huh? And you know, you start reading about it, you start getting into areas where you see, to me, human behavior is fascinating, because sometimes it's very contradictory. Like I said, and it's one of those things where you, like I said, I don't want to say I woke up one day and it's like, I get it now. It's like all of a sudden you, little by little, you start realizing where your true interests lay. Like I said, when you graduate from high school, you're like, I know what I want to be. I want to be a whatever. And let's face it, how many 18-year-olds are really, 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 really know that much about themselves? A lot of times. Not really. Yeah. You know, sometimes, yeah, you will have somebody that's got a real clear purpose. But usually when you're that age, you're absolutely sure about something, but you really don't know yourself that well. But anyway, it's one of those things that it was by degrees. And like I said, during those years, I had a really good, I want to say I do have an analytical mind. During the 90s, I got into the paranormal work. This was way before anything with the reality TV shows. I also did a lot of work, you know, as, you know, like I said, I did a lot of, with behavior, you look at a lot of things of as far as psychology, models, why people, you know, whether it's addictions, why people sometimes do things that are contrary to their own well-being, because you always think, why would anybody do that, you know? So it, to me, it was a fascinating thing, and it just took off from there. And then, you know, of course, I went into hypnotherapy. My work that I did as an investigator helped me tremendously to understand sometimes why people do the things they do, or they're with a certain people, or that they're crying out for help, but they feel like they cannot help themselves. They're, in other words, they're always waiting to be rescued. Mm. And so, you know, it was like all these things were going on around my life, and one thing complemented the other and helped me understand that as complicated as we are, we're kind of simple, because ultimately all we ever really truly want is to be happy. Mm-hmm. And by this, I don't mean running around like, you know, in the Sound of Music, you know, like the hills have the Sound of Music. That's wonderful. Yes, we do have moments like that. Like when you get a new purse, for the ladies out there, you know, that kind of, when you're happy, but contentment is what I'm saying. Happiness, mm-hmm. moments of great happiness, contentment. That's really what all human beings want. The problem is what gives us that feeling. For example, let's say an addict has had the reward centers in their brain so burnt out that the only thing that really doesn't make them happy, nine times out of doesn't make him happy, is just feeds their body, the reward centers in their brain, is the drug use or whatever. It might be a process addiction, whatever. The things that make other people happy, like I met somebody new, or we're going to the movies, or I'm going to take a great vacation that everybody gets, you know, excited about. Those things don't matter. So this is one of the things that I learned as far as learning about human behavior, which I found so fascinating, and helping understand people why sometimes they do the things they do. But let's face it, and I think any psychologist will tell you, I think everybody that goes into this field is hoping in the process to learn more about yourself. Yeah. You know, the silence of the lamb. Okay, yeah. Let me go off the thing. You know, the silence of the lamb when Hannibal Lecter is psychoanalyzing Clarice and he's asking her why she wants to rescue the lambs.
Yeah.
And she wants that. That's why eventually she becomes an FBI agent. What she's looking for is to save the lambs, the silence of the lambs. But she goes, that's part of her drive, this weird thing. Well, I think that most people that get into this, they along the way, they're hoping to understand themselves better.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And because you have so many different aspects of what you're into, and I'm so I want to know how you got into creating, you know, your Miami Ghost Chronicles. Like, what led you down to that path of supernatural?
Well, ever since I, you know, when I was a kid, like most kids, you know, that I started reading books about ghosts. You know, that's what they had in the kids section of the library, ghosts and dinosaurs, mysteries, you know, stuff like that. Hans Holzer. So I started reading that. And then I did not grow it. And then in the 90s, I started writing about it. And then I was always a freelancer, where I joined a research foundation that covered the state of Florida. And they would contact me when they had things down in like South Florida area to participate in the an investigation, or they would just need my help. And in other words, but in the meantime, let's say between investigations, I started Miami Ghost Chronicles to just to, I had a lot of people send me stories. I had a lot of people talk to me and tell me things that I don't think they had told anybody, because I was willing to listen to them. And sometimes things happen to people that they never really understood why. They lived, let's say, a few months at a certain place, and they would tell about this weird stuff, and they never figured out why or who, just that the time that they were there. And to me, those things were fascinating. And I mean, throughout the years, I've got tons of stories of people sending me emails. And like I said, I was one of the founding members that's still around from the original group of Florida Paranormal Research Foundation that's still there. Some of them, most of them, but a lot of them after the years have gone on, I'm still one of the ones that, and I learned to work with a lot of other groups. That was the thing. I'd like to work with other groups. Some of them are heavy, especially after in these last few years where they've come out with all this equipment. A lot of them rely heavily on equipment, others not. I do a lot of consulting, because a lot of people have known me. I've traveled to other states to help other groups out. Or even now, I consult where they'll call me and they'll ask me, what do you think about this? Or we have this something going on here which has this flavor to it. Like, what do you think about this? And I'll tell them, you know. I've even had people sometimes call me, you know, about using groups the other way around. It's the client, you know, and I help give them instruction, like, okay, if you're gonna allow somebody in your home, this is what you should be looking for, you know, the other way. And it's just one of those things that evolve. The years roll by and I was still doing it. I learned a lot. I saw a lot of things. And to me, I guess, like everybody else, ultimately, it's like what happens to us after we die. You know, everybody always thinks, is that it? You know, once you die, that's over? Or does something happen to us, our souls, our spirit, whatever you want to call it? Is there something that survives the death of our bodies? And I'll tell you what, I've seen enough firsthand to absolutely believe that, yes, that there is more to us than just our bodies, that the end of our bodies is the end of our consciousness. It's over.
Hmm. Yeah. So I'm going to get into that, the dungeon approach later, but for you, what has been the most, like, I guess a terrifying experience for you in your career of the supernatural? Like, you know, because the thing is that I can't even, I'm scared of the dark, so I can't comprehend, do anything like that. Or even watching scary movies, I cannot. So I'm curious.
You know what? It's really funny because, like I said, I've always dragged my kids along into some of the stuff. And when they were teenagers, a couple of times I was doing with another group up in Fort Lauderdale, this historical place, which is, and they would say, you know, stuff is going, people are running in the other direction, and there's mom, look, you know, like, get her out of there, you know, because especially my two sons who were teenagers, they're like, yeah, everybody's running away from Godzilla, and here's mom running towards Godzilla, or, you know, whatever, you know, Godzilla being some scary apparition or something. Yeah, you know, I have had moments of experiences, sometimes visual, auditory, where you jump, like, let's face it, you're a human being, but then you think, okay, that's what I'm here for, but, you know. I want to say One of the times that this was a few years back, usually we had people show up like in their cars, in their vehicles, because everybody was coming from a, you know, we were doing an investigation. And, you know, usually what we would do is afterwards we would, you know, instead of standing outside somebody's house, we would go to like a nearby parking lot, gas station, restaurant, burger, somewhere, just for like a 10-minute, like, everything okay? You know, what did you get? Because, you know, it's very unprofessional to either have that discussion when the client is there or out front, especially if these people, it's midnight, you know, or 1 a.m. And let's face it, nobody wants to have your neighbors think what's going on over there. So I remember one time where it was in the parking lot of one of those mini marts, and it was like at a corner. It was after hours. The place was empty. It wasn't here in Miami. It was a little bit further up, so it was a smaller town. So when I say traffic is nil, nothing. One time, I had two occasions. One time, we were standing there, and I want to say maybe it was six of us, and we just parked our cars, and we're standing there, and we're like, well, what did you think, and what did you think, and what happened? You know, this is before we... And all of a sudden, you know, nobody's paying attention, and we start hearing a conversation, like people talking. And you know what? When you're not paying attention because everybody's talking, then everybody looks at one another, and we're like hearing somebody, like a bunch of people talking. And we're like looking around, like, did you hear that? Yeah. Where are they? You know, we're looking, there's nobody around us.
Oh my God.
We're hearing, like, and now the funny thing is you could hear people murmuring, but you couldn't understand exactly what they were saying. You know, like when you hear far off, like a murmuring, more than one person, almost like a group in a sense, at least three. And you're like realizing there's nobody around us that's close enough that we would be able to hear, you know, them at 1 a.m. on a weekday having a conversation that's drifting over to us. And that's the first time that you realize that some things can follow you when you leave an investigation. And we all looked at each other and said, yeah, it's all right. Yeah, let's go. Everybody, let's go. We'll resume this conversation. I'll email you, okay? You know, we never figured it out. We never found out. We just looked at each other and you see us like looking around. I think there was like one car parked in front of this little mini mart. The gas station was empty. It was like a business, like a little, you know, the intersection. And there's no traffic. There's nothing. Far off, there's a few residential homes, which all the lights are off, maybe a porch light. Everybody's asleep. It was like 1 a.m. And we're like looking around like, who the hell is, where's this coming from? That was one of the first ones that I really like. I was like, okay. Just because we say it's over, like another time we had something similar where, same thing, this poor lady, same thing, we were parked around each other and we heard something thumping around in the trunk of her car.
Oh my God.
Same thing, we all looked and we looked at her like, man, what did you do? Did you leave your cat in your trunk of your car? Because it wasn't like, you know, when something falls or shifts, it was something that you could hear like moving in the trunk of her car. And I remember her looking at us and she's like, no, no, you know, and I'm like, well, something's in there. Like, we're thinking, did you leave the window? We're trying to figure out how did something get into the trunk of your car. Nobody at this point is thinking supernatural because it's sounding like something alive.
Yeah.
So we're looking at her and we're like, she has a regular stand. In other words, she's not. And we're like, okay. Like, so we look at her and we're like, okay, you got to open the trunk. And she's like, yeah, it's your car. Like, of course, you're the one opening the trunk. Sorry.
Yeah.
She was a trunk. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. All her, you know, she didn't have a bunch of crap. She just had like, you know, those cables that you know, just a couple of things in her trunk of her car. She said, I don't have anything in there. And we're like, okay. And then she goes into the car. And this was around the time, I don't know if you were, the Beanie Babies were a big deal. Mm-hmm. And she had a couple, she was one of these people that collected Beanie Babies. And she comes back and her eyes are like this big. And we're like, what's wrong? She goes, the Beanie Babies, they've been moved. And I mean, you look at this. This sounds like something from a sitcom. The Beanie Babies moved. We're like, what? She goes, yeah. But she had like a couple on her dashboard and things like that. And she's like, they've been moved. They're on the floor and on the seat next to me. And we're like, she goes, I drive with them all the time. They don't ever shift. They don't ever move. They're there. She was hysterical. She was getting hysterical. You know, and I know it sounds very, like, funny. But right then and there, you're like, what the hell? You know, like, what is it, again, that's following us? That's something that was in there. Like, her, we never figured that one out either. Another one I want to say that was... I've heard footsteps. I have heard footsteps. Just, you know, either afterwards when I'm examining recordings. Like, in other words, you don't hear it right then and there. You hear it afterwards. Other times I have heard it real time. Sometimes very close, sometimes distantly, like in another part. The only time that I could say that I kind of wigged out was I was doing an investigation. It was an older house. It was empty. A two-story house. And for anybody that's familiar with really older houses, you know how the stairwells are very narrow, you know, and hallways are more narrow. This is like an older house, okay? And I remember the upstairs, there was two bedrooms. And I had said, okay, I'm going to stay upstairs with the recording. I'm going to turn off the light. Let's see what happens, what I can hear, if anything manifests. The house was almost empty. They had taken most of the furniture out. They had just left a couple of pieces back there. And I remember there was nowhere to sit, so I had sat on the floor. And I was sitting almost in the hallway, but against the door of one of the bedrooms, which were really small. They weren't that big. And behind me was where the stairwell, you know, you came up the stairs. And, you know, that was the beginning of that hallway. And I was just sitting there. And again, it must have been like 1 a.m. And all of a sudden I hear something. And I knew where the other, there was not that many people that night. I think it was like maybe 3 or 4 of us. And I hear something, and anybody that's familiar with wooden houses will know that when you go on stairs, they make sometimes like a squeak, like a, you know, when you put your weight on something. And then I hear something or somebody, I want to say it's somebody, coming up the stairs without shoes, like with like the slap of feet, like a barefoot, in other words. And I knew perfectly well that none of the team members was barefoot, much less were they going to come up the stairs, unless they had told me, I'm coming up, so we could account for it. And I remember my back, I'm hearing this up, as it was like a, you know, when the stairs just go up. Like I said, it wasn't a big house. So I'm hearing something coming up behind me, because my back is to that stairwell, to where it ends up at the end, the beginning of that hallway. So as it comes closer, that's when I start making out that it's barefoot, somebody coming up barefoot. And it's difficult to explain how you know the difference between that and somebody that has shoes on, but you can. And a little bit of a squeak, and I was like, okay, at some point you're going to have to turn around and look and see what's coming up those stairs. I was like, okay, you know, like part of you doesn't want to look, but part of you is like, I gotta look. I have to see what's coming up the stairs, and something's coming up the stairs and it's barefoot. Yeah. And because I think that's the worst fear that people have, is they're going to see something.
Yeah.
And I say, well, if you don't look, this thing's going to grab you by the back, by your neck. I mean, you know, your imagination goes, ugh.
Yeah.
And so almost when it's up there, I said, okay, that's it. No, and I said a bad word, like, fuck it. You know, and I just turned around. There was nothing there. Which, believe it or not, sometimes is scarier than actually seeing something.
Mm.
Yeah, and later on that night, I had one of those little Radio Shack digital recorders on. And like I said, a lot of those things you really don't know what you pick up until later on, where you review the audio. And I remember I said, okay, all right, let's see. So I stayed up there, and I remember that there was only like a bed frame that they had propped against one of the walls of this room, which was rather small. They had only one window, And so they had a little bit of ambient light coming through there, but there was this corner. I was like catty corner. That corner across from me was dark. It was like a darker corner. Like I said, I was almost outside in the hallway, just trying to keep an eye on both rooms at the same time. But I'm leaned up against a thing. And all of a sudden, I smell, you know, that smell right before a thunderstorm when it starts to rain, like ionization?
Yes.
Like almost like a humid. And I'm like smelling that. And I'm like, and I'm looking out the window, which is closed. And I could tell there's no bad weather. There's, because that's another thing. When you would go on investigations, usually you check the weather beforehand. Like, what am I going to expect? For practical reasons and because it can affect the investigation. I knew there was no rain expected. I'm looking out the window. It's clear. I don't see any, no whip. And I'm smelling ionization in that room with me. And then, like, in that dark corner right across from me, I see what, like, that in that darkness, like, it shifts a little bit. Like, something starts taking form, and I'm looking. And I see what, I want to say, looks like it grows, and the top is, you could kind of make out, like, the outline of the human head and shoulders. And I'm looking. And it's almost, I see it turn its head and it sees me. It almost becomes aware of me. And then whatever it is just darts whoosh, into the closet. I was right next to it. And that's it. That was the end of the smell just faded away. And that was like, it was very, but it, what it taught me was that it was aware of me. In other words, it wasn't a residual haunting where it was on a time loop or, you know, it was just doing its thing and it was unaware. It, when it saw me, I saw distinctly when the head moved and it saw me like sitting down against the door of the room. And once it became aware of me, it darted into the closet. So, you know, it was like, again, that those are a lot of things that you have that firsthand experience, which leads you to believe, in other words, you don't have expectations about what you're going to see. You don't. And a lot of times, it's visual, it's auditory, your sense of smell. Also, you know, you will have phenomena. I want to, and I mean, along the years, I want to say you have certain encounters that at the moment they startle you. I want to say really about the scariest thing is when you go into an investigation that there is some type of malevolence or darkness to it. And I'm telling you, you, from the moment you go in there, you feel a difference. You're, especially after you do this for a while, your body starts like saying, beware, beware, beware. And usually you don't do that just because there's a supernatural agent there. Your body or whatever senses you have are trying to tell you whatever is here is dark. Mm-hmm. Okay. And as a matter of fact, that's when, and by this, I don't mean your imagination runs away. This is after you develop like a certain, like you've been in places where, for lack of a better word, it's just a regular dead person. Okay, I mean, it's scary because it's life versus anti-life in a way, but sometimes you go into places where you feel it right away when you get there. Sometimes, believe it or not, it's even what's going on, the interaction with the living and what's there, where I don't know if you've heard of the term of people being haunted versus the place. And some people, families or individuals, unfortunately have some type of darkness, as in a dark entity that has been walking with them for quite a while. And then when you talk to them, you realize every place they've been at, they have had some type of supernatural something going on. And you're like, wait a minute, you know, you realize that it's you. It's not the place. And sometimes if you happen to move into a place that's, it's got its own thing, and then that's when you get the Barnum and Bailey Three Ring Circus and people are like, what? Things are going crazy in here. And it's because you brought in another player into a paranormal circus.
Yeah, and when you're doing those things, like that's the dungeon approach. That's where you're just relying more on your senses then.
Right. Well, the dungeon, this is, I want to say this is benefit again of doing this. I can tell everybody when I got into this, this was when you paid to develop film. That's how far back, in the 90s, when there was no digital cameras. So basically, you relied, there was very little instrumentation. You maybe had, maybe you could take a base temperature, cameras, 35 millimeters. You spent a lot of money sometimes taking care, taking pictures of nothing. And maybe cassette recorders. You know, it was very basic. And I want to say the good part of that is you weren't distracted by too much instruments. I've seen lately where there's too many investigators have too many things going on, too many instruments to pay attention to. And the thing, what happens with that is if you don't have enough people to man him, pay attention to cameras and to all the, what you need, it all of a sudden that becomes the focus versus you'd be surprised. And it develops more patience when you sit still and observe. Just sit there for a while and observe. And that's when you come across a lot of interesting, actual supernatural. Not when you got a bunch of people and the cameras, you know, like, hey, and the ding, 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 and the lights and the, you know, let's throw that net and the, you know, the little, you know, and I've worked with all that equipment. Dungeon approach is somebody that's really familiar when they feel it in their body, okay? Mm. And they don't let their imagination run away with them. And they have the patience to sit there, maybe even an hour, 2 hours, and observe, okay? And that's when you really, truly get a lot of phenomena happening. But most people don't have the patience or the time, because really what they're hoping to do there is they want to capture that evidence right away, you know, now. And the supernatural is not an on-demand thing. It just isn't. And contrary to what most people think, you will have some entities which they're belligerent and want to make themselves known. But I want to say 80% of hauntings, if it's especially, if it's an intelligent haunting, they hide. They do not want to interact with an investigation team. They're hoping that they will make themselves scarce and you will leave. And that's exactly what most people do. So unless you quiet down.
I have to ask you then, those movies, the Paranormal Activity, the movies, what is your take on that? And then we'll move into the other side.
You know what? And I understand. You're making a movie and it would be boring. You know, you got to make it think like, I bought this groovy little thing at the flea market, and that night, you know, I got attacked. And I understand. Entertainment is entertainment. I tell everybody, you know what? When you...
Your video went out.
What?
Your video?
I cut out of the video? Let me see.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Maybe that they got mad I asked that question.
Yeah, really paranormal. Let me see. Okay, am I back?
No.
All right, let's see. Hold on. Alrighty. Okay.
What timing, hey?
I'm telling you, somebody's like her. Okay, a video. Okay. All right, how about now? Okay, I see myself here. Okay. You still don't see me?
No. Okay,
yeah, I see what you're saying. Start video.
Okay, now you're back.
Okay. It just, I'm telling you, it just did that by itself, by the way.
Yeah, I know. we're being...
Well, yeah, you're being sabotaged. You know, a lot of people at home, Arlene, you're so... Yeah, they can mess with electronics. They can't. I've seen that happen a lot of times. Yeah. Yeah. It's so, weird. It's weird when stuff like for no reason whatsoever, you know.
Yeah. It happened again. Your thing went out.
It went out.
I was
out
about
again.
To ask that question about it. And then it.
Okay.
Well, this is hilarious.
I'm telling you. Okay. Video. Okay. All right. How about now?
No.
Okay. Let's see. Okay. Video. I'm telling you, that is so funny. It really.
Maybe I'll ask it right now, and then so when you're live on video, we'll see what happens. So I guess the thing is like with those movies, Paranormal Activity, and all the other stuff. Like how real or how accurate is it compared to based on what you've seen?
I think that. Sometimes, you know, like, let's say, I think whether it's a haunted house or a haunted item or a whatever you want to call it, yes, it can be dark. You can have an attachment to an item. But usually, in my experience, it's very slow and incremental. And in some investigations, it takes people all of a sudden a while, like their life starts to unravel in certain ways. And then when they follow it back, you know, that's one of the things I do, you know, on the pre-interview, which is like, okay, how long have you had this experience? Was there a triggering event? Somebody's death? You know, like, let's think back. When did you start realizing? You'd be surprised how some of them all of a sudden, I'll say, did you move someplace? Did you acquire this? Did you acquire that? An item? Anything? You'd be surprised how many times they kind of realize the point of origin is either when they brought in a certain piece of sometimes jewelry. It could be a piece of furniture. I've even had it where, you know, a family member has died and they bring back, you know, a certain item memorabilia. And they don't realize that sometimes even their family member, that attachment was with that object, even when their family member had it. But for some reason, they never spoke about it, and they bring something into their house. Or, you know, the famous, you know, I went to the cemetery thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually a point of origin. It's just slower. I want to say that what you see in the movies. Sometimes it's something... just sometimes a feeling, let's say, for example, I've had people move into houses where one of the rooms, they didn't know it, one of the rooms was being used as a sick room for somebody before. You know, somebody that was being taken care of at home, who had been sick. They never knew it. You know, the house or the place was painted, it looked beautiful. And that one room that was, they learned later on, was being used as a sick room for a certain person. Maybe elderly or just somebody that was suffering from some type of disease and was at home, they start experiencing physical symptoms similar to what that person had. Other times you have people just even the feelings they even if it's not an act of haunting, depending on, if they say if it was a piece of furniture or clothing where they even start sometimes acting, getting characteristics of that person.
Okay. Ooh, it's getting scary. I feel it. I have this poster behind me. Can you get back on your video?
I'm working on it. Why is it doing this?
As you're talking about this, I'm looking at this poster behind, or this... you know, Arna had me behind me, and I'm like, the eyes are staring at me. I see them, and I'm getting scared. I'm like, oh my god, okay, like maybe let's change the conversation.
It's like, don't do that to me.
Oh my god, I'm getting scared.
Okay, let's see. Let's see, how about this? Let me see if I'm trying to like. Okay.
And for the people who are listening and watching, the reason why you're hearing all those noises.
Oh yes, I'm sorry. I have chickens, and I have a lot of exotic birds, and and when you have a lot of animals, guess what? In the middle of the day, they are awake, and they're like they want to make themselves known, and yeah, it's usually a real big mess. Okay. Let me see.
Yeah, I have to stop looking at this poster. Look, it's staring at me in the eyes. I guess you don't have the computer. Don't look at me. Or don't look at it.
Yeah, I tell everybody, you know how that I said I would never bring in something from the flea market or an antique store or even those curbside pickups, you know, where people now put stuff on their curb,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that it's just, I mean, people usually are just trying to be kind and nice, or I would say, if you ever get a bad vibe from it, I don't care how nice it is, leave it. But let's say you don't, and you really could use it. I would smudge it down. I would never, ever, ever bring anything into my house that I would pick up in any of these places. Because there's just no way to know what the background is on it.
Mm.
And for all you know, like I said, I've had done enough investigations that ends up being the point of origin of where things started. Like I said, and that's the way it usually works. It works so slowly that people don't catch on right away. It takes them a while to realize, hey, you know what? After we did that or we bought that home, that's when everything started going crazy for us. Are you still? You're still wigging out with?
Yeah, like I'm getting. I get scared so easily. Like, say, if I were talking to you right now and you went around that corner, right, and then I walked around the corner, you went boo, I would probably freak out, you know. But then the thing is, even if I walked there again and you did it a second time, I'd still be equally freaked out. Now, like, you know what I mean, my body is getting tense, I'm getting scared, I'm like, oh my god, I don't see anything, but I feel like eerie, I'm like, oh no,
you know what, it's
since we're talking about paranormal, right at that moment, this thing kind of technology or whatever interrupts with it. It's never happened to me before. And, you know, it's hilarious. And even with getting on Facebook, like live, you know what I mean? It's I don't believe in coincidences. I think everything happens.
But yeah, I mean, but, at you know, at the same time, it's like you know, you got to be careful, but you can't also like always be looking over your shoulder, as far as you know, we do have it's not we're always going to be the victim of everything, you know what I'm saying? There's just people that prime themselves also into believing that this is going to happen to them, you know, like don't do that either. That everything is the ghost. I've been to a lot of investigations which it turns out to be anything but the paranormal, and people want it to be the paranormal. I'm thinking, do you really realize what you're asking for? And it's like, no, you know, either you've got a draft coming down, or, you know, you move something that now a draft that wasn't there before is there now, or something is making this noise. I've had people run out of their house in the middle of the night because they hear a weird noise. They actually like leave, like go to their cars and like, don't you, what did you try to find out? No, I'm not going to find, no. We just left the house. We went to the car. We went to my in-law's house. We went to my mom's house. There's no way. It's like, come on. You got to try to find out what it is. It could be anything.
That sounds like something happened to you. To be honest.
I've had people do that. And it's like, okay, you cannot jump the gun that quickly and assume it's the paranormal. Believe it or not, a lot of times it isn't. I mean, it could be maybe something at night, like condensation, something that if you won't hear it during the daytime because the weather isn't, you know, you only hear it at night. It could be a lot of things. And people just, they're just like, no, it's the ghost. What ghost? I don't know what ghost, but I can't. And it turns out to be anything but. So, yeah, it's kind of like a weird kind of situation where you can't give in to your fears either totally and be ruled by them. That's like, you know, don't do that to yourself. Don't do that either.
But luckily, I don't run into those situations a lot. So maybe I'll have the courage to build a stronger muscle or courage to deal with it. But at this moment, not so
much. Well, see, I'm telling you, I have no idea, Carol, why this is acting. The camera decided it was just not going to, you know, just cooperate. I really don't know what to tell you. I don't know why.
Well, that's all right. You know, actually, maybe one of these days, what I'll do, you know, when I'm able to go to the States, maybe I'll just go with you. One of those.
Yes, we can do that. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's, yeah. Like I said, I talked to a lot of people, and you know, I'm really happy in the sense of all the paranormal reality shows because it's made it more mainstream. And but I think the downside of it is that there's sometimes too much sensationalism. And you know what? There are families sometimes that go through things that they really don't understand. And for lack of a better word, they're terrorized. They are terrorized inside their home. Like, where can you go if it's happening where you live? Okay. It's not like when you see the horror movie and everybody picks up their stuff and, well, oh, that was so scary, but okay, let's go home now. Mm-hmm. If this is where you live, which is supposed to be your sanctuary, and it's everything but your sanctuary, mentally, physically, spiritually, it terrorizes a family, especially when they don't understand what's going on. And despite a lot of the things that you see, all these families wanting to talk about their ghosts, there's a slew of them out there that is like, please, please don't say anything to anybody about this. I've had a lot of them that have approached their clergy or their parish churches or anything looking for help. And they're turned away or dismissed or poo-pooed. And they're kind of like pulling their hair out because they're like, okay, if I've gone supposedly to the people that deal in this, which is the spiritual world, and they don't lend me a hand, then what am I supposed to do? And you'd be surprised. I have run across a lot of those scenarios where even priests, clergy, I'm not going to lay it only on the Catholic Church. I'm going to lay it, you know, any type of denomination or congregation or whatever you want to call it, that I tell them, you know what, those people do believe it. They just are so scared of it themselves that they rather tell you that it's your imagination because they don't want to confront it either. And you're lucky if you get a house blessing.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, it's so crazy because as we talk about this whole supernatural stuff, like there's so much parallel to, you know, dealing with our physical issues. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're talking about these ghosts and paranormal activity, but then that parallels, you know, the our past and fears that we don't want to conquer internally. So it's kind of crazy how that is parallels a little bit.
Well, sometimes people, believe it or not, they use also the paranormal, and I have seen this, to how can I say it? They want the paranormal instead of dealing with their own problems.
That okay. is bonkers.
You know, and you think, well, why would, because it's just, like I said, I mean, I've gone to investigations where we've told the family or the individual, you know, we can't absolutely say, but we don't feel there's anything, or we notice that there's something going on, and they become upset. They want to have the paranormal exist because if you have a family that's in crisis or has got some type of dysfunction, this becomes like the decoy. Instead of them dealing with what's going on with them, they decoy all of this towards the the ghost. How's that? You know what I'm saying? Instead of maybe dealing with something that's going on within the family that needs to be addressed. This person is behaving this way because they're being influenced by the ghost kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? That sometimes happens.
In real life, because it's almost like, you know, you don't want to deal with your fear, your past. So you're going to numb it with, you know what I mean, certain other things being too busy. You know what I mean? So it's really a crazy parallel. But, you know, now.
Yeah, I have seen people use the paranormal. Like as in, this is what I'm going to use to not take care of or address something that's going on with myself or with my family or the dynamics. Sometimes I've had this even with teenagers. Don't get me wrong, sometimes I have seen kids being influenced, but some people it's like, okay, stop blaming it on the ghost. You know, you might have a kid that's got some type of behavior disorder. You know, don't cheat them out of maybe getting treatment because you want to lay it, on the supposed ghost that's making your kid act out. Don't do that. You know, that's why I'm saying it's, you got to be a little bit careful around that. I have run across people also that have mental health issues where they're convinced that this is the phenomena, if any, is taking place, is a supernatural agency. And you realize up to a certain point, by the way, and I've spoken to a lot of investigators, that you have to be really careful where you tread on this ground. Sometimes this person really does need mental health, and you really cannot do anything for them as a paranormal group. Let's face it, you're not there to do mental health counseling, or in some cases, if they need some type of medication. Sometimes you do see both things together. We see that a lot. Okay, we do see dark, supernatural entities, manifestations, coupled with mental illness. Okay? And that's a bad combination. Bad combination. And again, the advice I give to paranormal groups is you need to back out of those things. You need to really be very careful around situations like that, because it's, you know, people like that, that their grip on reality sometimes comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you're there to do a paranormal investigation. You're not there as a mental health counselor, psychiatrist, psychologist, whatever that person may need. There's a lot of people that should be on meds and they don't take meds. And again, you know, when you tell them, they can become aggressive. When you tell them, no, we didn't capture the ghost, or we didn't see the ghost, or we can't tell you what the name of the ghost is. And so, yeah, you have to be really careful in those scenarios as an investigator. And by that, again, I don't mean that it's just totally a person's head. It's just that sometimes you have to look out for the safety of your team. So yeah, there's a darker aspect also to paranormal investigations that people don't see, because when you see these shows, they have producers and people that go in there and they kind of vet the people, the location, what's going on. In other words, they kind of have a control on it. Every once in a while, you see stuff that goes off sideways, but overall, they have a production crew behind them that does all the legwork and steers them away from somebody that's disturbed. But when you're a regular paranormal investigator, you'd be surprised. You could do a pre-interview with some people and they sound very logical, or they downplay that there's already somebody living in the household who is disturbed. And you only find out about this when you and your team arrive. And then you're like, oh. And you realize, you know, I've seen that where that other person, I want to say, is being influenced by something dark, and they're giving the team members a look like, any minute I'm going to come at you with a cleaver. You know, and you're like, you know, you see everybody's like, okay, don't lose sight of that person, especially when they're staying in the house. And yes, you see behavior, mental health problems, and you also have a flavor that whatever is there might be influencing them, because they're like, they're shooting, they're not happy at all that you're there. And that's one of the times that you back out, and hopefully, you know, after a while you develop a network of either groups that are willing to engage in cases of this nature. And again, even then, they're very careful. Even clergy, I want to say, are, you know, really careful around scenarios like that. You know, especially if you have any schizophrenia or really where that person loses touch with reality. Yeah.
So with these kind of scenarios, like, have you run into situations where, okay, you thought they were mentally ill, but then they're actually possessed, like kind of an exorcist situation?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I have found that people sometimes that do have mental illnesses, and there is, it almost exacerbates the symptoms of what their mental illness is. In other words, they become difficult. They don't want to take their meds. They don't cooperate with family members who are trying to help them. They, whereas maybe without this darker influence, they would be more cooperative. How's that? They would take their meds. They would go see their mental health professional. They get along better with their family members. In other words, they help their support system out. They do all the opposite. Okay. And yes, and I've been to places where I've looked into a person's eyes, and what looks back at you is not human. I know this sounds like really like Hollywood-like, but yes, I've had that. I've seen that. I've stared into somebody's eyes, which the what's looking back at me is not human. And I don't know how to, I know that's, it's a human person, but it's just this thing like, you know, we do a lot of communications with our eyes, our visuals, you know, and you know how you, sometimes you look at that person and go, oh, that person has crazy eyes, but you know, at least you know they're human and crazy, whatever. Yeah. They're human, you're just crazy as hell. But this is where you see this total lack of reaction. Like, dead eyes, like, you know, like, I've encountered that, and that's, this is a person that you would say has no fear of consequences. There is no right or wrong, there is no, I'm going to get in trouble with this, I'm going to get arrested, I might go to jail, I'm not supposed to do that. I want to say a lot of the horrific cases that you see in the media where you'll have people decapitate family members, do really horrific things. A lot of times, yes, those people did have severe mental illness, but one of the things that's like the elephant in the room, of course, that nobody's going to talk about is that there might have been some type of dark spiritual turbulence egging them on, making them just make them see, let's say, that their family members, whoever they're, as the enemy. And not only as the enemy, as in the person I must get rid of. It could take a lot of, you have to understand the purpose, and this, and we're getting into non-human entities here. This is really dark stuff. Their aim is corruption, agony of the human beings, destruction, unhappiness, and it's like a ripple effect. It doesn't only want to destroy the life of that person that it's taken over. It wants to use that person as an instrument to cause anguish to those around them. Okay? So that's when you have these people that do things. And I'm sure you come across stories where some of these people are interviewed later on by law enforcement, and they'll say, I don't remember when I did this. I don't remember it. I remember this point up to this point, and then I remember being arrested. And in the in-between part, I don't remember it. That happens. And that's part of it when you talked about being taken over or possessed. Okay, out and out possession 100% of the time is really rare, but there's something called obsession, which is where you're obsessed and possessed only for a period of time. Okay, which is when it basically sublimates the person's real personality. Because sometimes people have mental illness, but they still love, let's say they could still love their family members. You understand what I'm saying? The illness, the disease in their brain doesn't take away from their feelings towards those they love. But when this thing takes them over, that part of them it's put in the background. And that's when you see them do horrific things against people that they love. And then you'll hear interviews where they'll say they can't remember, or they'll describe feelings, certain feelings like rage and that they don't understand themselves, even within their own madness, how they could do this. That is a lot of times where you see the darker aspect of a possession obsession scenario going on. And some people will say, well, you know what, this person's saying that because they're gonna plead insanity or something like that. It's like, yeah, but you know what? There's people that do this, and it's they know that they're going to be the ones that are going to be arrested for it. You know, it's not like you do a crime and you're hoping to get away with it. It's like you're the prime suspect because you were there. You know, like, so yeah, that you see that more often than not, but there's just no way to prove it. And of course, you know, I have heard of some cases where the defense attorney will try to use that more, but more than not, what the defense attorney has to fall back on is insanity, mental health problems. Another good example of this is, you know, the Amityville Horror, right? You know, the murder that took place before the Lutzes moved in, which was when he went in there and the guy killed his entire family, murdered his parents, and murdered all his siblings. And as a matter of fact, he's still in jail for it. And he's kind of flip-flopped on why or how he did it. And some people are saying that he was doing drugs. And I mean, there's been a bunch of theories. But I want to say, I believe that there's the part where he says he cannot remember when he actually killed him. Like, in other words, he blacked out. Yeah. That part, I tend to believe it. And, you know, and some people think, well, you know, and that's another thing, which I think is really weird. I'm going to use it as a reference because I've heard this happen. A lot of people will say to this day, why nobody heard those shots coming from the house when he killed the family. This was a residential neighborhood in the middle of the night, a shotgun blast, several shotgun blasts. You would usually hear.
Yeah.
And not one neighbor, another neighbor's going to hear it, especially if there's more than one, you know, where somebody's going to wake up and go, was that a shot? What is that? Especially if you live in a neighborhood where it's not a bad neighborhood. You know, it's not like, hey, shootings all the time here. Nobody heard anything. Sometimes I've heard that as being an aspect of the same thing. You know, there's some type of dark malevolence involved. Same thing, there was another case, I want to say it was in the 70s or early 80s, family annihilator. Same thing, wiped out his family on an Easter Sunday. Shot everybody up on a Sunday in the middle of, it was in Ohio. His brother, his mom, his sister-in-law, like 5 or 6 kids, inside a house in the middle of the day. Nobody heard any shots. He was the one that called police at about 4:30 in the afternoon and said, hey, I did this. I think you guys need to come over. Mm-hmm. How can you not hear shots going off inside a house? Very weird stuff, you know, that overlaps. And some people don't want to look at it. But yes, sometimes you will have a dark influence, which is that whisper, you know, that little push to make that person go over the edge and do something. It's not a total manipulation. All you have to have is that whisper in the ear at a certain time, or that little push to do it, And then that moment of madness takes over, and then, of course, horrible things take place. So when you ask me, it definitely it overlaps one thing and the other.
Yeah. So how, in those kind of situations, and like, I think after this, we'll kind of wrap it up, and I want to see if you're available so we can kind of go to the part two of this, the other things that you're in, but it seems like we've gotten a kind of, you know.
Yeah, I know. We went down the bunny trails, various ones. Yes, I
know. Yeah. So, in those kind of scenarios with the houses and the people being haunted or exes and all those other different things, like, how do you go about healing the individual, the place, and all those different things?
Well, I tell everybody, you know what? A lot of people, especially, I want to blame it again on the paranormal shows, they think that you're going to have somebody come in, or clergy, or a group, or somebody, they're going to go wave the magic wand, poof, it's all gone. No. You know what? You, depending on your religious beliefs or non-religious, whether it's just smudging, prayer, you have to keep doing this. Even after a group leaves, either you have clergy come in and do a blessing. You need to keep doing this. You need to keep cleansing your space, okay? You need to keep working at it, because most people don't want, they want somebody to come in, do the dirty work or the heavy lifting, and it's over, it's done with. No, you have to keep, like I said, if you have certain religious beliefs, prayers, and or smudging or blessing or salting your ground down, even burning incense, you know, whatever floats your boat. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It doesn't have to be time consuming. It just has to be something that I think you have to do on a regular basis to protect your space. Like I said, your home or where you live is your sanctuary. Your space, your personal space, especially when we're the ones that go out into the world. And you'd be surprised what could hop on you as an even just negative energies or vibes from people around you. You might look at them and they might look put all together and happy. You have no idea what's going on with this person or what they're involved in. And this could piggyback on you, or even people that come into your home to visit, even if it's people that you know them, you sometimes don't know what's going on with other people's lives. And they come to your home, and whatever's going on, they leave some of it behind. And this is a way of cleansing your space. You have to do that.
You talk about like cleansing. Like, what is the best way that people can cleanse themselves in their home? They can use sage, or what have you found has been the best thing for that?
I usually use like a sage stick.
Okay.
Like, you know, those little ones, you know, that they already sometimes come wrapped. Or you can get some and put out the seashell. And usually what you do is you get to the entrance to your house, and then you walk counterclockwise to the home. And you basically smudge and you say, I banish all negative energies and entities. Only light and love may exist here. And you open up your cabin and your closet doors and you do all of that. And in between, you know, get some sticks of incense. They smell good. And maybe I burn incense, I want to say, like, at least twice a week in my home between smudgings. I pay attention to, like, this, I don't want to get people paranoid either. But you know what? If you start feeling, like, either really angry or depressed, and you're like, man, well, there's really no reason for me to feel like this. Why? Chances are that something, you've brushed shoulders or something with somebody who this thing is, it's not your feelings, in other words. Mm-hmm. This is the time that you go and you smudge yourself a little bit. I have a good friend of mine, she's a police officer, and I told her, you need to start doing that. And sure enough, that helped her a lot, because, when you come in contact, especially either because of what you do or where you go, let's not even talk if you go to a hospital, a funeral home, a cemetery. I mean, that's a given. You come home and you need to smudge down big time. All right. And again, it doesn't have to be elaborate, but you need to do that. Or again, if you come home and you feel a certain way and you really can't account for why am I so mad? Chances are that what you're feeling is not really your feelings. And you need to dispel. And when you do this on a regular basis, okay, you'd be surprised how much of the time things like that just, a lot of these weird things just stop happening. They go elsewhere, and there's such a thing also as salting down the entrance to your property. It depends on where you're at. I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, if you live in an apartment building, you know, you're not going to salt around the, you know, the perimeter of the building, but at least at the entrance, just to keep certain negativity away. Sometimes you even have neighbors that you just don't get along with, you know, and they obsess all the time. They, you know, that saying about the evil eye?
Yeah.
Okay, the evil eye, really what it means is when you get somebody that obsessively hates you. Just, and by the way, sometimes it doesn't even have to be somebody well-known. There's just people that are like that. They just don't like you. And they just constantly fixate very negative thoughts towards you. That can be a problem. Negative thought forms can be a problem. Luckily, very few people know or have the time, but you do get obsessive personalities that do that. That do that. Yeah.
So for people who are experiencing any of these like supernatural phenomena, where can they get in touch with you to seek your services? So this is just going to be one aspect.
Your best bet is, because I usually just work with other groups, but I did write a book called Supernatural Safety, a DIY Paranormal Guide. And in there, I give you a lot of things that you can do. There's a couple of instances where I tell you, look, if it's really dark, then put the brakes on and get the help of either clergy or a group, even though there's things that you can do. But a lot of it in the book, it describes what you know. In other words, don't surrender. Don't give up your power. That's a big no-no. Once you start surrendering, like, I'm helpless, this thing is more powerful than me, no, this is your house or your place to live. This is, you know, this is where we're supposed to be. The people with a human body, where we're supposed to be, they're the ones that are not. So when you cede dominion to an entity or whatever you think it is, or negative thought form, don't do that. So the book, I would say, is your best bet as far as the majority of things that can happen. For example, a lot of people don't realize that that you need to bless the salt that you're going to use. And I include there like a ritual prayer that you use to cleanse the salt, cleanse the water, you know, or luckily you can get holy water, but let's say you're going to use salt. A lot of people just get salt. You have to bless the salt from impurity before you can use it to lay it down as a barrier. And a lot of people, and I put that in the book, little things, you know, it covers, it's basic, but it helps the everyday person with either addressing and then prevention, which is what we talked about, what people should do on a regular basis.
And where can people connect with you?
Their best bet is if they go to Amazon, you can look up all my books as look for Marlene Pardo Pelliser. I have an author's page. You go to MiamiGhostChronicles.com, you're also going to find information there. If you go to MarlenePardo.com, that's my personal page. I also have information there. I have people write to me. And a lot of times, like I said, mostly what I do now, just because of lack of time, there's only so much I can do, is consult with groups that call me and say, you know. And again, because I'm bilingual, I grew up in South Florida. Sometimes if there's an aspect of the haunting or of something that is Afro-Caribbean or Santeria or any of these type of different offshoots that you saw come about in the Caribbean and South and Central America, I'll consult with them and help them out on that. Or to understand better, you know, curses that are laid down on properties. I've been on investigations where if something was done on that property and the family that was intended towards move away, whoever comes in, even though they were not maybe the object of it, just because now they live on that property, they're going to get affected by what was left there. And they have no idea, none whatsoever. Again, they have no point of reference as, did you do something? Did you buy something? What happened? And they're like, no. Okay, then went, oh, no, as soon as we moved here. You know, and then that's when sometimes you have to do a little bit of investigating. But, yeah, there's a lot of things or, again, and I talk about that, if you live close to a cemetery, you know, a lot of people think, oh, yeah, of course, a cemetery is haunted or not haunted. I tell people, a lot of invocations or people getting rid of spell work, dead animals or candles are thrown into cemeteries. Okay, you go to a cemetery, you could pick it up. You live close to a cemetery, it could bleed over into your property. If somebody's conjuring at a three-way or a four-way or a crossroads, which are infamous for spell work, some of them hoodoo, you know, some dark, some not. You know, I've had investigation where it's bled over into that property where those streets bisect. A lot of the times it's done. As a matter of fact, you know, people have heard where once upon a time they would erect gallows at four-ways, at crossroads, or that they would bury suicides at crossroads. The intent was so that the spirit, which they believed would be a ghost or an unquiet spirit, would not be able to follow anybody home. For example, you know, suicides, not only were they not allowed to be buried inside consecrated ground in a cemetery, they were purposely buried at crossroads for that reason. Because it was assumed that being a suicide, they would be ghosts. And this was, or they would erect the gallows.
Yeah, whoa, that is so much, you know what I mean? It's almost like I'm having my front row seat to like, you know what I mean? A scary haunting horror movie, you know, I'm gonna in my seats right now. But you guys are listening and watching, you know, this is just part one and or part one with Marlene, and we're gonna do a part two because I want to get into all these other areas of expertise that she has in regards to, you know, being a hypnotist and also kind of doing that past life regression. Yes. I want to get into some of the unresolved blocks and then body syndrome. So we're gonna have to allocate another time for that, yes. A part two. So, but now we're going to just close off the session and stay on for a couple minutes. Marlene, I want to figure out the next time for that. So okay. For anyone who is watching right now, I really kind of thank you guys for your time. Always treat others with love, kindness, and compassion. And any last words you want to say, Marlene?
No, it's an interesting world. It's a friendly universe. How's that? Despite all the dark stuff that we were talking about, it's a friendly universe.
Yeah, I really have to say. Kind of visiting and whatever.
In my yeah, it's like, aren't you glad we're doing this in the middle of the day when it's daylight outside?
I don't think I would even be talking about
you know, that. I apologize for all the strange animal noises, but I can't help it. I can't control the animals. And yeah, I have a lot of free range chickens and exotic animals. And, you know, they kind of flip you off if you tell them to shut up.
Yeah. So next time, hopefully there won't be any paranormal activity that interrupts our ability to.
Yes, no paranormal sabotage, huh?
The conversation to other areas. So that will be fantastic. So thank you guys again so much for your time. Much love and peace out. We'll see you soon on part two.
Okay. Bye bye.